Blog Talk Radio.
This is Grover Weaver speaking. Good morning. We greet you this morning as we do each and every Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from the city of Fort Worth as we talk live to the nation. I'm excited about our segment today. It's about me. It's a town hall meeting between my Congress and me and the other constituents of the District 26 here in Texas. Congressman Michael C. Burgess, an MD, is my representative. He is a Republican. He's holding a town hall meeting Thursday, April the 28th, 2011, in Frisco, Texas, and it is, the time is 7 to 8, and it is far, far away from where I am in the district. I live in the southern portion of this, of his congressional district, and it goes upward and spans out, and the lower part of it is part of the district that used to be Congressman Martin Frost, who lost the election over 10 years ago, and as the Republican House in Austin, or should I say the Republicans in Austin, conjured up a gerrymandering that allowed them to get the spoil. And that's the way the congressional redistricting thing goes. So Martin Frost lost, as well as his constituent in the southern portion of Tarrant County, where all the blacks, by and large, in this here congressional 26th district is, where the unemployment is higher, where the health care is lacking, and where the unemployment, as well as all the other social ills that take place in this country, is. And this honorable doctor, who is serving this district in a dishonorable way, have chosen to set this here meeting 61.5 miles one way, 123 miles round trip from my house in the district to where the meeting is going to be held. With gas prices at $4 a gallon, that's going to pretty much cost me $35 or $40 to get there. But I am telling you, it's so important. I put in a loan from my daughter to and hit her up for the money to finance this trip. It's important for me to go there and say to him, don't impose upon the poor for the benefit of your benefactors, your rich benefactors. He voted for a budget, the Ryan budget. And I understand why he chose to hold it in the richest part of his district, because there is where he has told his biggest lie, that he's going to repeal health care. And this vote that he cast for the Ryan budget did indeed allow him to vote for the repeal of health care. But instead of him using the $1 trillion that would be saved if you could wipe out the health care, Obamacare, or the Health Affordability Act, if you could just wipe it out the book, you would save $1 trillion on the deficit. And well, you should know that we're right now in a big, great tug of war trying to decide that sometime in May, perhaps the second week in May, we're going to be put in a situation where we're going to have to raise the debt ceiling. So instead of him taking that $1 trillion and applying it to the debt, He does not do that. Nor does he take that $1 trillion and try to save Medicare, which he is in part of this in this here bill, and that's the primary focus of this bill, is to do away with health care as we've come to know it. To try to control the cost, he could use that to control the cost, but he doesn't do that. The bill doesn't do that at all. What it does do, it takes the money that you save by doing away with health care. And in the district that I live in, you have a high percentage of people without health care. You have a high percentage of people who have been unemployed for over 99 weeks. You have people in this district who are without the proper representation. They are being taxed to the extent that they are paying a Medicare tax on their payroll tax that's being deducted from them, that's applied to their Social Security. And they are paying this here knowing that they cannot get what they or their grandparents or their parents are getting. So that's a dishonest thing. And I can't wait. I feel it's important for me to go out there and say to him, don't do it. Don't do it. And I find when I look at what's going on, I see that I'm part of a great effort by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the DCC. They have targeted 25 of the freshman Republicans who came into office pledging that they would protect Social Security. So they are getting ready to release a campaign in these districts where these representatives are saying in real clear terms that they lied. They lied to the people. When the Affordable Health Care Act set out to take from $500 million from the Medicare Advantage Part D because of their Obama and them, they found a lot of waste and abuse that they could take out of that and take that same money and apply it to the health care bill, then they so did it. Well, these here Republicans latched on to that and went out and lied to the seniors. And that's why 59%, and the last couple of weeks, you know, I've been railing about that 59% of the seniors voted for the Republicans and gave them the wedge, the club, to beat them over the head now by taking away Social Security. And the Medicare that they propose to have after they abolish this, what we got as we know it, will look somewhat like the Advantage Part D is, where it is a part where you take a portion out of your pocket and then get a portion from the government. And then that's the deal. And whatever the government give you, then you got to make up for the rest, or you don't get it. It is what this here frame of this here donut hole. And what they are is attempting to do is create a situation where many seniors will not be able to have affordable care. Now, you're going to have many of the nursing homes going to just shake them out of the door because they are not going to be able to stay in a nursing home. Why would the nursing home agree to take less while the health care insurance company get all the gravy? They're not going to do it. So as a result, those that can't pay the bills are going to be put out. And they are going out and now trying to tell another lie on top of that, like I heard Warren say, it's just a blueprint. It's not so. And I can't wait to go to this here town hall meeting, because I want to see how Dr. Burgess, Michael C. Burgess, who is this Republican representative that represents this here District 26 here in Texas, I want to see how he play it. And I got some, I'm going to ask him these questions that I've been setting forth to in my presentation, in my broadcast, and I'm going to ask him about that. And I want to finish off by asking him, I know what he's going to do for Social Security, but I want to hear how he's going to tell the lie. I know how he's going to deal with Medicare, but I want to know how he's going to tell that lie. But I haven't heard him say whether he need to see the birth certificate of Obama, and I need to know if he believes that Obama is a Christian. Because the reason why I ask that, I see that over the weekend, the Southern Baptist Convention, some leaders have said it's just totally nuts for one to believe that the president is not a Muslim. He is not a Muslim. I heard his confession. They have heard his confession. So if anybody who are now contending that he's a Muslim does not know what it means to be a Christian. And political facts, the website that checks out the right and wrong of things that's published on the internet, and they have took the birth certificate and looked at it, and you get a nutcase like Daffy Donald Trump, who cannot or will not exceed this here because the foolish man is out here saying things because it's enhancing him, and he's throwing water. You could just say he's tipping the piss in the face of everybody that said, Donald, don't do it. Michael Bloomberg, a billionaire man himself, mayor of New York, said, you know, you're full of shit, don't do it. You got Seinfeld saying no. You got Robert De Niro saying quit it. And he is taking issue with all of these here people. And you got these here people like... And this here is really the worst. And I really have a lot of problems with this here white Christian in this here country. And I say white because Billy Graham have always represented this here Christian thing and with the faith. And Christianity in America has a white face. But I saw this here. I saw the PBS special, God in America, and the way they presented it, I came away with a good feeling, and I came away somewhat strengthened in what I had already known, that the Grahams in this country, the Reverend Billy Graham, was a backbiter and a behind the scenes, and he attempted to throw water and sand on Martin Luther. He did not want to see Martin go forth in the cause that he was fighting for black people. He picked up this here advocacy like most white folks did during that time. Don't wait, don't go so fast, just a little bit, you're going too fast. Cool it. And Martin was saying to hell with it, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong, and we're going to push forward with it. But before then, we had Dr. Reverend Billy Graham attempted, when the Jews attempted, because the Jews was the one that really pushed America to the point of taking prayer out of the schools, because they first came in with it and had prayer, and some atheists in Illinois said, no, that ain't fair, you shouldn't do it, and they kind of did away with it. But the white Christian church got all upset about it, and they figured out ways to get it back in. And when they did a deal in New York, the Jews rad up and said no, and the Supreme Court then came out and said, no, it's illegal. And lo and behold, Ronald Reagan came in speaking lies to them. That's when that lie, when they came, Ronald Reagan is the first one who saw that the Christian church, the white Christian church was gullible, and he came in and made it seem like he was running on a family value ticket. And if you know anything about Ronald Reagan, family values left a lot of things to be desired. That's why you could have a Newt Gingrich and a Donald Trump can come up and talk about their divorces and their marriage, because Ronald Reagan was divorced and marriage. He was the father, the head of a dysfunctional family, didn't have no relationship with his kids. So now you got a man that saw an opportunist, a political opportunist, saw that he could use these here hillbilly Christians out of the South, and he used them to get in. And many of them, the Jerry Falwells, in the end, they became disillusioned with the politician. But you had your George Bush coming in and talk about my favorite philosopher, my favorite person is Jesus Christ. And, you know, he gave a confession. He gave a confession, confessed that he was a Christian, and because he wanted, George Bush needed to prove and needed the affection of his father, he used it as a tool to get what he wanted. And then, as fate would have it, the wars came, and he had given away the money. He had given away all the money out of the bank account. All the money. Because when he came in, Clinton had a surplus, and he, in order to cater and incur favors, he, and because the Republicans believe that if there's money in the till, you need to get rid of it quick, because some damn Democrats are going to come and they're going to start spending on social programs. They're going to start helping people, and they're going to start doing certain things, and it's going to, in the end, cost the wealthy and the rich, the producers in this economy. So give away all the money. And then when they come with their hat in hand, begging and plead, and try to pull at our heartstrings, we can say we can't afford it. See what I mean? You see where we're at right now? Because we can't afford it. If you tell them we can't afford it, then what can they say? We ain't got it. So George Bush gave it away. But then 9/11 happened on it. So since he had to get the powder dried and get the and assemble to the cavalry and get over there and get after Al-Qaeda, well, now we got two wars going, and we done gave away the drug benefits, so we got a deficit. And Obama came in, and he had to do a lot to save it because of the recession of 2008. And now you got the deficit where they say you got to do it. You just absolutely positivity. We got to get rid of it because we're going to fall off the cliff. You got everybody. You got S&P. You got Moody. All the rating comes, so we got to do something. You got Bloomberg saying something. Well, you shouldn't raise tax. Yeah, we need to raise them, because what we need to do is get some more revenue. Because what we need to do is some things. We need to get jobs. We need to put America back to work. I was sitting up there just before I came in the room to start talking to you today, watching MSNBC, watching Rachel Maddow. And she's got this PSA, this public service announcement, and she's showing the big dam, the Hoover Dam. And her point is, you know, can't anybody do this? A confident individual can't do this, and no business can do this. You need a government. And you need a big government to do this here. And we got infrastructure stuff on the table that we need to do, but yet and still we got this fear of failure that we're scared right now. And we're not scared. Look, we are lying. We're telling that lie to try to infuse fear in us. America is great. The only thing America need to do is get the jobs and do things to where they can't leave, and punish those who are sending jobs out of the country. That's all we need to do. We just need to raise our revenue up to above our GNP so we can have enough, and then once we get it settled out, then we can go in there and make some adjustments on whatever these entitlements that we need to. But right now, I say to you, and I'm going to say it to the congressman, We don't need no, if it come down to, if they want to play games with the debt limit, let it be. Because the Democrats ain't got nothing to lose. Most of the people that live in my district ain't got these high mortgages. They don't have a lot of 401ks that they're afraid about that's going to go in default if we default the government. Many of us are tapped out on our credit cards, so we ain't into that. I've had to regroup myself once or twice with my credit situation. So if you kill my Social Security, you'll kill it for a little while, and I'll suffer without internet. I'll suffer without my rent in my low-income housing, but perhaps since I live in a house where everybody is on Social Security, you couldn't be here unless you was a Social Security recipient. So I'm not fearful that they're going to throw us all out. But there are people in this here country who are the Republican benefactors. They're going to suck wind. And if they carry this here country off the cliff, they're going to do like they did in 1929, be jumping out of business, of buildings. So I'm not worried about this here threat of this blackmail. I say bring it on. Now, I'm mindful of the fact if they hold it to the fact and it happened, yeah, Obama's going to suffer. But let it, so be it. I would not let them bulldog me. Obama is not stupid. I know Obama can read the tea leaves just as good as me. So I'm saying to you, I'm going to be there Thursday. I'm going to leave here 61 miles away about 4 or 5 o'clock because going from the ghetto to white America to rich America in that time frame, it's going to take a little longer. When it was Google, it showed that it was 61 miles and it's like an hour and a half in traffic. So I'm going to have to leave early to get there. And if necessary, I'll put me a sandwich inside the car. And we'll go to some public place. If a museum is open, we'll view some public display of something and wait till we can. The doors are open. And we want to put our name at the list to speak to this August group and say to him, like I said to you earlier, don't impose upon the poor to support your benefactors who are rich. Now, that's all we want to talk about today. We'll keep you posted as we move towards the meeting come Thursday. We'll talk about as we ready ourselves on the next meeting at 10 o'clock. And then on Wednesday, we're going to reveal to you what we feel is a calling thing to do. We got to concentrate on an effort to save Social Security. We got to save Social Security. I got to figure out a way that I can give the rest of what I got left to raising up the conscious level of what's happening out here in Social Security and Medicare. Because they want to change it as we know it. And everybody that was born in 1959, I think it is, you are going to have to deal with. You're going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to deal with it. I think I'm a little bit wrong about that, but I'm saying whatever, and I can't figure that in the top of my head because I don't have the teleprompter. I don't have that, but I know that everyone that's 55 of age and under will not have Medicare as we have it. You'll get a coupon. It's a voucher. And I think it ought to be something that we ought to rail about. We ought to go to these here public meetings and necessarily disrupt them. If necessary, create chaos, some attention, so we can wake up these here old people that drifting away into some kind of a place where their medication, their meds have taken them, and they are trusting the lie because it's a familiar voice that they have heard. So don't believe the lie that they're trying to save Medicare, because Medicare, we know what Medicare is. Medicare is a trademark now for all practical purposes. And if you change it to the way they want it then, you might, as Lawrence O'Donnell said on the last word, it won't be Medicare. It might be Medispin, but it won't be Medicare. Because once they change it, it's changed, and it won't be the same. Well, we're here. We'll hope to be the same. We'll be right back here on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. And until then, we bid you a good day.